Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name is Still Paul Madot. Thanks very much for joining me on this episode. Today I have Kayleen Duffy. She is Senior Director, Enterprise Sales at a company called Seismic, coming to us from the Big Apple. Kayleen, how are things?
Paul, I'm doing well. I'm excited to be a part of today's show. Thanks for having me.
Well, we have tried to get this on the books for a little while now, and so I'm so thrilled that we were able to create this. And so say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro, and then we'll get into it.
Absolutely. Everyone listening, excited to be a part of today. Kayleen Duffy, an enterprise sales rep for a company called Seismic, per Paul's introduction. Been selling SaaS for about 8 years now. Was an ex-college athlete, which I think is relevant as a part of my story, and been in New York for about a year now. So that's a little bit about me.
Well, I'm thrilled for you to be here. And I want to talk to you about 2020 a little bit. We'll get to that as we get through our conversation. But if you're ready, let's get into your story. You ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's go back to when you were finishing your education. I'm fascinated by this here. So 2 years at Clemson, you are on the women's soccer team. And then you transfer to, of all places, Bama. Talk to me about the transfer, number one. And did that cause a small civil war inside of any family or allegiances or anything? And then also talk to me about when you did graduate at Bama Marketing, any thoughts around or any remembrance of what did you think you'd be doing, you know, call it, sure, you know, 10 years down from the road. So, but let's start with the transfer from Clemson to Bama.
Totally. So this is kind of crazy just how women's sports work, but you commit to play at a school verbally 2 years before you show up on campus, which, Paul, is mind blowing to me that at that age you have to make a decision like that, but made the decision to go to Clemson. My coach at the time, who I had agreed to play for, called me right as I was signing my letter of intent and said, "Hey, I'm actually going to Alabama. So you'll kind of see how this goes." You know, I said to him, I committed to the school. I like my teammates. So I stuck around. But we had a really good college soccer player as our coach. And I'm sure you've heard this old adage, right? Just because you are number one or two at what you do doesn't mean that always transfers into good leadership. So that's actually what the problem was. I think 10 to 12 of us quit or transferred that year that I left. So they didn't even have enough to field a soccer team.
Wow.
But I kind of went back to my Rolodex and said, you know, where would I want to finish my career? I wasn't ready to throw up my cleats yet. I still loved the game. So figured why not go to, you know, the number one American football school in the country, right?
And so you went to Bama, and so then you have another couple of years there or so, or you finish and you graduate with a Bachelor's of Science in Marketing?
Yes,
kind of business management, marketing, and so on. Okay, so what year was this?
2012.
So 2012, okay, so 8 years down the road now. And so do you recall when you graduated, once everything's done, the kind of the hat's in the air and everything, the gown's off, and now it's like, okay, school's out. Now, what am I doing? What did you recall thinking you were going to be doing, call it 2020?
Yeah, so this is a fun story. I'll tell you this, like most, I think, athletes, right? You think you're going to be in that 1% that makes it pro. That is one thing, you know, being an ex-college athlete, you wish you had a little bit more guidance that said, hey, reality check, you're not going to be Mia Hamm. So I discovered that pretty quick. But So I was in the business school at Alabama. Marketing was my focus. And I actually took a sales class. So I grew up in a sales family. My dad was at Ernst & Young in sales for the longest time. My mom was in ad sales in Chicago. You know, I feel like I grew up wanting to be some sort of doctor or something. I feel like most kids, because you think it's the way, you know, what you hit your wagon on in your career. But I always found sales to be super fascinating, right? It's like I would see my dad at all my soccer games, and he could just make time to live his life, but also just provide us a pretty nice life. I'm like, what is this? What is this career that this guy's doing? So I sort of knew that like marketing or sales was maybe on the horizon for me from a career perspective. I think playing at Alabama, we had a really cool partnership with Nike. I think in college, my dream job was to be in like branding or marketing for Nike. You know, like I'd be the person that gets LeBron James to sign with us and market his shoe or something. But again, I think an also really hard career to get into.
Just a little.
Right. That could have been me though.
But, well, listen, you could have sent LeBron a tweet. Who knows? Maybe he would have replied and who knows, right?
Exactly. So yeah, I love this story so much. And I still know this guy's name, Joe Calamusa. He was the sales, and this is crazy to me. Sales is now like a degree, which is amazing, yeah. But it was a specialty at the time at Alabama. And I'll never forget it. This class inspired me. I was actually excited to go to this class. And this was the spring after I stopped playing soccer. So this was like, the time that I could finally be a college student, but I loved this class and I'll never forget it. He was talking about kind of how he got into teaching. Long story short, he worked for Tyson Chicken and became a multimillionaire selling chickens. And Paul, I was like, if this guy can sell chickens and be this passionate about it. And I think he was maybe early 40s, maybe 40, teaching people how to sell because he was passionate and had so much money. I was like, one, the passion and just knowing that you could create a life for yourself. I was totally inspired. I mean, this guy outside of my parents a little bit, he just inspired the heck out of me. I'm like, there's like, what? You can do this. You can like love something you do and make a good living. You know, I don't think the chickens inspired me a ton, but to me, that's the story I love telling to people, but that's kind of what got me hooked to sales.
Well, your comment regarding, sales and lifestyle and what it affords you, certainly rings true with me. I've often said that to me, sales is both the highest and lowest paid job in the world, outside of these athletes making 50 million bucks a year and these movie stars at, $50 million a movie and so on. But, a day-to-day job, totally. You can have a great life and you can starve as well as a sales professional as well, right? If you don't know what you're doing, if you're not on it and talking about intention and mindset, as we've been talking about here, nothing is really given to you. Yes, you can have a job, but, you have to get after it, right? And so you saw this path that, okay, maybe sales could afford you some options, some opportunities. And so where did you land in your first, quote unquote, sales job?
Yeah. And I'll kind of preface that. And this is a topic that I'm incredibly passionate about. As I'd mentioned, I think a lot of athletes think that you're going to spend 10 years after college just making millions with all these sponsorships. Like it's not a reality. I also think while you're playing college sports, you don't have time for internships, right? So during my 4 years, Paul, I wasn't doing an internship every summer, really figuring out what I wanted to do. But I was lucky to just have some good mentors. My dad was always big on, I used to have an Excel sheet of like my network. And I'm like, what? That is so pointless. Looking back, I'm like, okay, pretty good advice. But I was so lucky to have pretty, pretty incredible mentors that said, hey, I know you're trying to figure out what you want to do. You studied business, you studied marketing. I'd like for you to, and I had a pretty good network in Atlanta, but they said, hey, I'd love for you to talk to some ex-athletes who are in sales and kind of understand why and what made sense from like just a career transition from a career as a college athlete, right, to in the working world. So I was lucky to be connected to a few folks that I think just gave me some great advice, right? I'm competitive. I'm decent at time management. I'm coachable, like all these things that athletes, I think a lot of skills athletes have, they said, hey, that's really transferable for sales. And, I could get on a podium and say any ex-athlete, I think sales is a phenomenal career for, maybe I'm a little bit biased now. But my first job out of college, I always say I was slinging IT hardware. So servers, network gear, routers. And it was fun. It was at the time when like VMware and the cloud was becoming a thing.
Yeah.
Which is so wild. That was only 8 years ago. Like, it
Isn't
makes
that
me
funny?
feel like I'm old, but I'm not old yet. But yeah, so I was selling IT hardware. It was really cool. I interned for a few months, kind of got my feet wet, started to understand the product, the space. I was given a, I don't know if anyone on here remembers Hoovers. I was given a Hoovers.com account.
Well, I'm old enough to remember that, unfortunately, but yes, I do.
But given Hoovers and Wild Wild West. So you think about like it's how some people take their sales career, right? Like maybe they'll start off at a Salesforce or an Oracle and they'll start off as an inside rep and get all this insane process and training. I didn't get that. You know, I don't know, depending on personality, I'd probably give advice in two different directions. You know, maybe if you need more structure or like me, if you learn by failing and that's kind of where you succeed, I think that's why it yielded me decent results in a decent career thus far. But literally given no territory, given a Hoovers.com account. So I picked my hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio, leveraged my network there, and I was the Cincinnati rep for Atlantic's Global Systems.
And so where were you based? You were based in Atlanta, but your territory was Cincinnati.
Yep.
All right. And how was that experience? The different scope you must have experienced Cincinnati in as a salesperson versus someone who lives there.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. I think having the flexibility that I had, right? I was an intern. I didn't ever really function. And I know you and I talked a little bit about this offline, but I was prospecting and closing deals at age like 21, 22, which was so cool, right? Like not many people can say they had that experience, but I think I just got the sales bug at that point. Like the fact that I could travel and take clients out to dinner and expense it. I mean, it was like, wait, what is, again,
it
what is
meow,
this?
Right?
No, it was really cool. And to your point, experiencing Cincinnati as an adult was just incredible. So some nostalgia there, but you know, as crazy and as little process as Atlantic's had, a great company still. I mean, I learned so much at such a young age. And it was incredible. But again, it got me totally hooked on sales. Like the fact that I could control my schedule and the harder I worked meant some results that were in my control, right? It was a pretty cool first job.
You know, my first go at sales professionally was I worked at Xerox, and I wish I had this story to say that I knew all about Xerox's history and their value prop and training, and that's where I wanted to go. I was out of work and needed a job, so I took a job, and that's pretty much how I got there. And yeah. I went in with a 6-month mindset of, okay, well, if it doesn't work, I'm no worse off than I am, so let's give it a shot here. It ended up being almost 10 years, you know, after my tenure there. But where I'm going with this is, you know, Kayleen, in my first 6 months, certainly in my first 12, maybe even 18 months, I mean, I really struggled. Like, real, I didn't get it. I was working hard. I thought I was good. I had almost no results to show for it. And I remember, like, I must have mentally quit, I don't know, half a dozen times at least in the first 12 to 18 months. And so I'm curious about your first 6 months, a year, 18 months into professional sales, any real struggles along the line as well? Or did you take to it pretty easily and you just knew, yeah, you had to work hard, but did you get it? Or any questions along the lines of, I'm not getting this. This is harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah. So I would say at Atlantic's, and I don't know if it was the makeup of the company or who we were selling to. I don't think it came like that, like, there were definitely struggles, but I will tell you this, my first serious professional struggle was when I started selling SaaS. I didn't get the revenue model. I didn't understand, like, you know, I was going from selling, and it's so funny to think back now, because it's like the way my mind thinks is by selling a SaaS platform. But early on, Paul, I didn't get, you know, like the reoccurring revenue model, like how our company made money. It right. did not make sense to me. Right. And that translates into how you pitch
sure
it, right?
Sure, that's hard.
I didn't understand like the integration piece. Like a platform typically integrates into like 5 or 6 other things. I didn't understand with a SaaS solution sale that you typically sell with 2 to 3 other people, a technical resource, your boss, customer success. So that to me was like a big smack in the face transferring, because maybe it was easier to sell. You know, my sweet spot became like Cisco routers, and maybe it was just because it was a product, it was one SKU. Maybe that's why it came easier. And I'm not saying I didn't have struggles, I absolutely did. But the SaaS thing to me was really hard for me to wrap my brain around. And not only at Mir 3, but even when I transitioned to Marketo, like, you know, I studied marketing, but I was now selling to marketers that had revenue tied to their team and their name. I'm like, wait, what? Marketers work on brand and communications. And I mean, I could talk about all those, but yeah, I love what you said. Like, when you're transitioning into a role, it's like, you know, you quit mentally a few times, right? And the resiliency to pick yourself back up is like a real thing.
Yeah. And so talk to me about that. So your decision to leave Atlantix, what was behind that?
Really cool story. And this will kind of, I think this will hopefully become a common theme, but I'm big on mentorship, being mentored, mentoring. I went to a networking event. This woman was standing at a booth with the name Mir 3 under her. And she pulled me aside and said, "Hey, how long have you been in tech sales? When did you graduate? Blah, blah, blah." And I'd been selling for 12, 18 months, maybe 2 years. And right. She said, "I'm telling you this, there's not many women in technology sales. I would highly consider getting into software though." And I'm like, "Okay, you seem interesting. You clearly have had success," because she was the president of the company at the time. So what I was taught to do, right? I send her an email and say, "Hey, I'd like to get coffee and pick your brain on the comment you made."
Nice.
Fast forward, she became a huge mentor of mine, just navigating sales. You know, I feel like maybe my struggles at Atlantix came later on. You know, I'm building out this territory. I kind of have some clients now, like, what does upsell, cross-sell mean? How do you maintain your book? Like, you know, all those things that you kind of learn. But I, this woman by the name of Ann Pickren, I'll give her a huge shout out because she is still a huge mentor in my life. But she invited me to do this volunteer thing through this network group that we were part of. And I remember specifically we were sorting apples. And
like literally?
Yeah, literally. It was like a food bank and we were taking out the rotted. It was, it's such a vivid memory. But she said to me, she said, "Hey, our Southeast regional role is probably going to come up soon. I didn't tell you this, but I'd like to consider you for this. I told you 4 months ago, I think you should consider software. What do you think now?" Fast forward a month and a half, I wanted to follow her. I thought she was a super strong leader. I think I was 23, 24 at the time. I acquired a Coca-Cola as an account. I brought on NCR. I mean, again, some of the experience that by just following someone I trusted and I guess going with my gut and taking a little bit of a risk was huge. And that's kind of what got me into software. And I will tell you, one of my favorite parts about that job was working for Ann, but we were headquartered in San Diego. So I was in San Diego every month, which for an East Coast gal, I mean, there are beautiful beaches.
There are worse places, here, right?
But yeah. I mean, yeah. San Diego to me is magical, but it was super cool. I mean, I got so much exposure at a young age, the president of a 300 person, you know, decent size and annual occurring revenue was decided to mentor me. And again, someone I talk to every other month, but that's kind of how I got in and why I left Atlantix. I just saw this opportunity for some reason. I was like, this SaaS thing seems kind of cool. And I think probably best thing I could have done in my short career thus far.
Fair enough. So how long were you there for? Give or take.
2.5-ish years.
Oh, 2.5 years. Okay. So 2.5 years, you take a leap of faith. Someone shows some confidence in you and it ends up being a great experience and some travel in there as well. And you're right. Southern California, outside of COVID, I'm down there probably 6-8 times a year. So it's
the best.
Spectacular. Orange County, San Diego, it's a great part of the world. Cool. So what was behind your decision to move on from Mir 3 after you know, what sounds like a pretty good run for an extended period of time? Was it your decision? Did something happen with the company? Did Marketo find you? What happened with that?
Yeah. So two things, and it's kind of funny what I'm going to mention because it's now our world now. Being headquartered in San Diego, I was 100% remote. I think some sellers are good at being remote. I think we've all kind of had to figure it out right now. I like, it sounds silly. I'm like a culture queen, right? I love collaborating on deals. And again, you can do that over Zoom. Seismic, many other companies have done a phenomenal job. Remote just kind of got old for me, Paul. It was good I got to see my clients, but it was just, being 3 hours ahead. And so that was one component, but a really good family friend had worked at Marketo for 2 years. And I mean, she's obviously a good seller because she and I now work at Seismic together, but she pitched me hard about Marketo. Her boss pitched me hard on Marketo. I was in technically two recruiting sales cycles with them. The first time I said no, the second time I was kind of on the border, and the hiring manager said, "We're not going to give you a third chance. So like, now's your time." And then in the meantime, my family friend, just her career had taken off and in a way that I didn't think was possible for someone our age. She was a year older than me, but I also did find it fascinating. At Mir 3, I was selling to like disaster recovery or IT teams, which some people love selling to. I think I was excited to sell to something, not something, but I don't know, a group that was more focused on revenue generating, which IT to me is more on revenue save, like cash savings and things like that, right? Like how can we consolidate systems, things like that. So the way they pitched me on getting to sell to marketers and sales leads kind of excited me. It seemed like a pretty solid transition, which it was, but again, there were tons of learning curves. But that's kind of how I came to that decision. And I think, you'll look at my career since Marketo, but I love selling to marketers and sellers. It is something that genuinely, as cheesy as it sounds, wakes me up in the morning.
And so, how long were you at Marketo's?
2.5, and that was the reason I left Marketo. I half by choice, half not. We got bought by Adobe in 2019, and our CEO, after that announcement, came to our office 2 weeks later and was like, "Thank you guys so much for all you've done, but we are closing the Atlanta office." So we got the option to move with that business unit to Denver, or take severance and find something new. And if you can kind of put two and two together, I think Denver's a beautiful city, but I did just move to New York City. So I think two very different cities, two different cities. I would rather be around obnoxiously large buildings with way too many people.
So, that scenario with Marketo and Adobe and packaged off, here's a check, don't come to work tomorrow, or you can move to Denver. It's still early on in your career. Granted, you're responsible for yourself, no kids, no family yet in your life. I get that. But that must have been a difficult scenario because there's always concern about, well, now what? Like, what's next? And so now what do I do? And when's the next job going to come? And, the severance checks are okay because, they keep you afloat for a little bit. And so I'm curious about your mindset when that happened. Were you destroyed? Did you see it as an opportunity? Were you indifferent? What was it like when the announcement came, here are your choices. Don't come to work tomorrow. Here's some money, or you can move to Denver and set up shop there if you want.
Yeah. So literally from a timing perspective, it was like pretty quick, right? It was like, we need to know. Just to be totally frank, I was crushed, right? Marketo to me, I think one of my great mentors from Marketo, he always said, you're going to have that one job that changes your career, whether financially, whether just like affirming that you're in the right job by the network you build. I mean, Marketo was most of those things for me. So I was crushed, right? Totally. And I think there was a little bit when the announcement came out, like I always saw myself at like a mid-sized tech company because you have access to your leadership. But then I thought, I am young in my career. Maybe having Adobe on my resume does do something. Maybe learning process, maybe learning a big organization will be good for me. So I think part of me, like those 2 weeks that we had to think about Adobe now owning Marketo, I mean, I was like, this could actually be a pretty cool scenario. And then fast forward, we get the news that we have to move on, but it was a lot, right? Part of me says, do I chase my career? Because there was potential for me to lead a small team in Denver, and it was a really big decision to make, right? But to me, there were so many, you know, how acquisitions and mergers function. Like, just because you're promised something in the next few months, I mean, it takes like a good 18 months for things to come to fruition and pan out. And I just felt like my gut decision says, let's maybe take some time. I traveled a little bit. I made it to club that year, but we didn't get to go to club. So I decided to go to nice. Costa Rica and travel a little bit. And, I mean, it was absolutely a tough decision, but,
all right.
I mean, I think you learn in sales though, right? Like, stuff changes daily in a sales organization. So you kind of just have to be prepared and roll with the punches.
Yeah, that's very well said. So, Kayleen, your hometown is Cincinnati. I got it. I'm hearing your story. You're a Southern girl, though. You're, you know, Georgia, South. Okay, Atlanta, I got it. How do you move to New York?
I mean, it's the best city in the world, right? It was actually my territory at Marketo, Paul. I'll never forget this. But my first meeting here was in Times Square, and I was like, why the absolute heck would anyone live in this city? You've got to be nuts. Then I started exploring every part of the city through, you know, the clients I was selling to. A lot of them were in like Chelsea and, you know, downtown area where a lot of the tech companies were. Fell in love with the city. And I said, if I don't move to New York before I turn 30 or get married or one before the other, I'm not going to do it. So last September, I just celebrated a year. I decided to move. And I think it was probably the best thing I could have ever done for myself. I think anyone in their early career, and I think risks can come in many different forms, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a move to another city. But I think it builds some character a little bit, right? I've given this advice probably without being asked too much over the past year, but I think taking a big risk for anyone, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in a sales role, is just, it helps you. It really does.
You know, your comment regarding New York resonates with me a little bit. Being from Toronto, I've been to New York many times. And I've often found that when I go to New York, whether it be business or for the weekend, I very much have converted into a 36 to 48 hour guy for New York. And I've often experienced what you said before you moved there. I don't know if I could live here. I love the hustle and bustle of the city. I like it. I love the fact that everything is tier one in New York. You can do anything you want there. Everybody's there. I mean, outside of a Walmart, everything is in Manhattan, quite frankly. Yeah. But, you know, to live there is a different thing than visiting or going to meetings, you know, back and forth for a couple of days. So a good friend of mine and colleague, Colin Nanka, who is over at Salesforce, was in the same boat. So he was working in Toronto with Salesforce. His territory was New York, would go down there once a week for the week or so, once a month, he would go down periodically. And then he had the opportunity to move there. And I asked him the same question. I said, what was it like moving there versus working there? And it was the same thing that you've experienced. It's like, okay, so I got it. But now that you're there, it sounds like you're loving it.
It's the best. Yeah. It really is.
So talk to me about 2020, because this is not what you were expecting. And I knew New York was hit really hard this year. I mean, like really hard. And so my experience with New York, Manhattan in particular, is there's not a lot of space. Most people don't live in 3,000 square foot condos and stuff like that. So how have you handled, you know, really both personally in this town with the lockdown and the fear that was going on and the uncertainty, but then also professionally, how did you stay afloat, certainly over the last 6 months?
Totally. So my answers, there's a lot of layers to this. I was lucky to be able to get back to Atlanta for a few months to stay with my family. So I will tell you this, I think and fear is relative, right? But my fear was like, I don't know this city that well to be stuck here by myself, right? Like I live alone in New York. I'm lucky to have my own space, but the fear of just being stuck alone. I mean, I just figured out where my freaking grocery store was, right? So it's like, I'm not going to try to navigate the city when it's in lockdown. So I was super lucky to be able to get out, right? But then there were these feelings of like, I just made this big move. Moves aren't cheap, right? Yeah. You they're expensive. I pitched my company on why I should move to New York, why I should get the New York territory, and I'm back in Atlanta at my parents' house, right? So I think early on there were a lot of thoughts. It's like, I'm stuck. You know, I made this big move before a big birthday, and now what? I will tell you this. I mean, I feel like so much really cool stuff has come out of 2020, right? I think mental toughness is at an all-time high. I think resiliency is at an all-time high. I think vulnerability is at an all-time high, right? Like some awesome, awesome things. I'll tell you this. I think what got me through the past six months now. I can't believe it.
It was like 6 years, right?
I think personally and professionally what has helped me, and this is something that I have not changed since almost day one of COVID, is celebrating small wins that are associated to goals that I can 100% control. Because to me, I think, and this does relate to sales too, but there's so much out of your control, right? In life and in sales, with your clients, with your family, with your significant others, right? Like there's a lot, I think we probably all learned that we truly can't control, right? And trying to detach ourselves from that. But I am so big on daily goals, right? Like it's on my phone right now. This week, I'm not allowed to miss a workout, right? And I'm not allowed to not outbound so many times a day, so many touches a day. No one can stop me from that. I mean, something horrible would have to happen for me to not do my workout or for me not to get on my computer and send 30 to 40 to 50 touches a day. So those are my goals for this week. I did also add one to read. So many pages of a book I'm trying to get through that I've just not committed to. But that is, I think, just from a confidence perspective, like me holding myself accountable to that stuff has made me feel more afloat when, you know, this people aren't buying software as much right now, yeah. Right? My rent is still the same in New York. Like so many different layers to what's going on, but I would say that's the big thing. And it's something that I've shared with my family, right? I think they're starting to adopt it, my friends. But yeah, I mean, I think, and it's something you don't realize how much it can impact everything in your life, but long-winded answer to your question. Clearly, I'm passionate about it, but that has been my strategy.
Well, I really appreciate your comment, and I'm aligned with it as well, certainly as it relates to 2020. Right now, kind of tough to see where it's going to be positive in the end, but I have a belief that says the history books are going to say 2020 will be a positive year. In the end, a lot of change is coming, how we interact with each other, our outlook on stuff. The world seems to be cleaning up a little bit, and the social injustice movements and COVID, it's just, we're just Maybe. A lot more alert. I've learned a ton in the last 6 months, certainly with my wife being a nurse and the kids working from home and adjusting the business and how to stay relevant and still grow versus just, you know, whittle away. And so, Kayleen, congrats on, you know, everything you've been able to create thus far. I said this to you offline. I'll say it to you now. It's traditionally enterprise sales is reserved for those with, you know, 15 plus years, 20 plus years exposure, because the belief is, well, you need tenure to deal with, you know, large companies and these elongated sales cycles. And yeah, that can play in. But you know what, if you have the right drive, if you have the right intention and you're willing to put the work in and you involve the right people, you know, there's no reason why, you know, you're proving it right now. Enterprise does not have to be just for you know, the old man smoking the pipe in the corner, right? So I'm glad you're totally breaking the mold. So congrats for that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Last Still question for you. Yeah. Last question for you, Kayleen. I've enjoyed speaking with you here. Any advice or feedback for anybody listening that maybe has served you well thus far in your life?
Totally. And I think it kind of ties into the compliment you just gave me. And again, I appreciate it. I think quote that I heard years ago, your network is your net worth, right? I am so big on my network, who I mentor, who mentors me. And I think the reason I've been afforded this opportunity to work in an enterprise sales role, it's because of my network, right? Ann took a chance on me to work Coca-Cola at 24 years old with a lot of coaching, right? But I would just say network mentoring. I also think just curiosity mixed with humility, right? Like, ask a lot of questions. No one's expecting me or you to be the smartest person in the room. I also think curiosity mixed with humility gets people to trust you. It helps build your network, right? And then I would just say my third one is balance, right?
Nice.
I think sales is a tough career. And if I don't have an outlet, I think I would lose my mind. But I think that's true for any career, right? Whether you're a lawyer, an accountant, a doctor, you have to have an outlet, right? Yeah. Maybe you're passionate about networking. Maybe you're passionate about working out, traveling, reading. But I just think balance and something to look forward to is has been crucial. So I would say those are my three nuggets to leave folks with.
Kayleen Duffy, thanks so much for being here. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, let's wrap another one up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. Be safe, everybody, and let's go Blue Jays. We'll be right back.